Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, wage rises are picking up in many parts of the world, especially the United States. That powers consumer spending and helps companies. But wages are not yet rising so fast as to threaten profit margins and thus investor returns. We'll take the temperature and ponder what the future might hold. We'll take a broad look at the impact of pay dynamics on corporate margins and consider the key indicators for labour markets on both sides of the Atlantic in the next few potentially politically turbulent months. We start with David Lefkowitz, US equity strategist for UBS. He studied the impact of pay dynamics on corporate margins. David puts wage gains in context, first of all.
We're starting at a very low level of wage increases to begin with. So the moderate increase we've seen so far, you know, overall, I wouldn't say it's had much of an impact in aggregate numbers. There might have been one or two select companies where we've seen a little bit of profit margin deterioration, but other companies have been fine. You know, there are companies like Starbucks and TJX where they've put through wage increases and we've actually seen margins go up. So it's just one part of the corporate cost structure, and there are other factors that potentially can offset that: higher productivity, higher retention of workers, and there's also lots of things going on with other parts of the cost structure. So overall, we really haven't seen some of the wage pressures that have been coming through have not really been having a noticeable impact on overall profitability at this point.
Pim Fox is the anchor of Taking Stock on Bloomberg Radio and Bloomberg Television. Here's Pim's take then on rising wages.
If you take a look at last Friday's Bureau of Labor Statistics report, it shows that wage growth, I think, was about 2.5%. This is higher than at any time between 2010 and 2014. And if you add to that the information having to do with tax and withholding receipts, so that measures how much people remit either on an individual basis or a business basis, how much they remit to the U.S. government in the form of taxes and withholdings, year to date, that is up nearly 6%. So that's pretty good. It follows about a 6% increase from 2015. And, well, if you go back to 2014, there was an increase of over 12%. So tax and withholding receipts are up, and as you just described, wage growth up also about 2.5%.
Brian Rose is U.S. economist at UBS. He expands on the United States picture.
Here in the U.S., we've actually seen the fastest wage increases at the lower end, people who are making around minimum wage. And there are a few reasons for that. I mean, one is just that the labor market is tighter. There are less people available to take those jobs. But there's also been a lot of political pressure, especially on the big companies that use a lot of lower paid workers to, you know, pay them a bit more, because minimum wage in the U.S. isn't really a living wage. It's very hard to survive on it. So we've seen some, you know, states and cities increasing their minimum wage, and also some of the bigger companies just voluntarily paying their workers more. So for companies in that space, there is some pressure. This is obviously not great for their profits, but I think what they've found, at least so far, is that, you know, if they pay their workers more, and especially if they raise them off of minimum wage and pay them a bit more, it helps with employee retention, and it gives the workers a bit of incentive to, you know, to work a little harder, to work a little better. So it's not all bad news, even, you know, even in that case.
Bloomberg Sebastian Salek, a regular commentator and analyst on Monocle 24, also has some interesting thoughts.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting time to be talking about this, given the jobs report we had last month, looking at the fewest workers in almost 6 years. So unemployment at its lowest level since November of 2007. So unemployment very, very low. But the number of workers added to the job force was also much lower than expected. Analysts had been expecting 160,000 and they only got 38,000. But we did see those hourly earnings rise, worker pay up 2.5% on the year. So we are seeing wages sort of edging up ever so slightly, but still that not quite that that impact on the corporate profits, as you were saying. So not quite to the point now where it's a problem, but they are edging up ever so slightly. Although in the long term, we are seeing the possibility of corporate profits falling. We had a report out from Goldman Sachs not so long ago that is eventually going to see wage growth pushing down on the corporate profits. But there are other factors as well at play here. You've got the lower oil price, the rising dollar. So it's not just wage growth that is going to have an impact on companies and their bottom lines.
Next, we turn to the impact of pay dynamics on corporate margins more broadly. Pim Fox explains that you need to place productivity front and center.
Well, I think you've got to add into the idea of wage gains and corporate profits the idea of what we would describe as productivity. Now, productivity, non-farm productivity in the first quarter was actually revised higher. But when I say revised higher, it was revised from a negative 1% to a negative 0.6%. So productivity is actually declining. And that can be for a variety of factors. It could be from automation. It could be from changes to the work week. The interesting thing also to look at when you think about productivity is how long do people work? And if you look at the data showing the average number of hours worked, it has only increased a little bit. So what you're seeing is the potential for wage increases with no real change in productivity. That's not great for the corporate sector because ultimately the corporate sector will end up having to pay those higher wages but won't reap the benefits by seeing greater productivity.
Why is productivity growth so poor, particularly in the United States? How does David Lefkowitz make sense of it? By comparing such instances with previous periods of weak productivity?
It's interesting because when I look at this on a sort of company level perspective, I don't really see weak productivity. I don't see companies saying that they're adding costs and they're adding employees and not getting more revenues for that. So almost it seems like that at this point there's a little bit of a disconnect between some of the GDP figures that we're seeing, which the official productivity numbers come from, and what we're seeing at a company level, because we're certainly not hearing from companies in any broad sense that there's been a significant deterioration in productivity.
Brian Rose, too, stresses that in terms of pay dynamics, it does all inevitably come down to productivity.
This is the key question. It really does come down to productivity. So we've seen since the global financial crisis hit and during the recovery period, productivity growth has been unusually weak. And if you want to, think about the pressure on profit margins, well, it's okay if wages are rising as long as productivity is rising in line with wages. But what we've been seeing lately is very, very poor productivity growth. So, again, here in the U.S., we've seen wages rising faster than productivity, and that is the situation that tends to weigh on margins. I think there are reasons to expect productivity to pick up. Historically, we've seen previous periods where productivity and growth is weak, and those are usually followed with above-average productivity growth. I think the situation is just temporary, that productivity isn't dead forever, and we will see productivity growth picking up. And again, this will allow companies to pay their workers more without suffering in terms of their profit margin.
We asked David again whether indeed periods of weak productivity in the past can help the ability to forecast.
I think it's very hard to predict this. I mean, nobody predicted the productivity boom in the 90s. Everyone was pointing to the adoption of information technology at the time and saying, well, how come we're not seeing the benefits of it? And then finally, it did start to come through. But the timing sort of caught people by surprise. It's sort of the special sauce in the economy that it's very hard to forecast and, really have any high degree of confidence about which way it's going to go from my perspective. So it's hard to say.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the months ahead in terms of political uncertainty and ask how this might shape the key narratives in labour markets. Next up, we want to try and gauge the extent of the potential economic disruption wrought by political uncertainty. How best to read the key labour market indicators in the next few, potentially rather politically turbulent months? We have a UK-EU in-out referendum, the small matter of the race for the White House, other elections and various political upheavals far and wide. Must you take into account potentially seismic political shifts? Well, certainly, argues Sebastian Salek.
Brexit particularly is one that's really being talked about within the context of UK unemployment, UK wage growth. We had our last report out last month. Unemployment at a 10-year low now, 5.1%. But the in-work, number of in-work people rose by 44,000, which is less than a quarter of a gain at the end of 2015. And this is adding to signs that firms are anticipating the fact that we could be leaving the European Union as soon as in a couple of weeks' time after that vote. So they might be putting hiring and investment on hold, not taking any risks. And so that's seen as one of the reasons why we're seeing the number of people coming back into work rising, but by not as much as we've seen in the past. So definitely something that you could say that companies are taking into account. We did see, though, wage growth slowing as well. So it is definitely something that is, it's a spectre in the mind of employers.
How does David Lefkowitz assess the road ahead, especially where he is stateside?
I think the election can have an impact. I mean, I think the question really is, will the election or the uncertainty leading up to the election change consumer spending patterns and business investment decisions? And I don't think that's going to be a significant driver, especially because, I mean, at this point, the prediction markets are pretty clearly suggesting that Hillary Clinton is going to win, and you know, therefore, there's probably not going to be any significant policy changes. If the race tightens and Trump becomes a more likely winner, then it's possible we could see some pullback in risk-taking just because there's going to be the potential for a larger shift in policy on a range of issues, and that creates uncertainty. Although I would not want to overstate how much uncertainty there will be. At the end of the day, the Congress is not going to change very much in its makeup based on what we're our current thinking, and any very substantial policy changes need to get through Congress.
And we asked Pim Fox, too, whether the key pressure comes from the personnel, who's in the White House, for example, or from broader international trends. Here's what he had to say.
Well, typically, you could say that if the economy is doing well and if people are getting the jobs that they want, and that may not be the case entirely, but if the job market is healthy, you would expect that the incumbent party would be able to hold the White House. Now, whether this is the case during this election cycle really is anyone's guess, because there's been an election cycle that has been able to either predict or really completely understand. But having said that, if a segment of the population within the key battleground states, and I'm thinking here places like Ohio, Florida, even in the Southwest, Arizona, as well as perhaps some other states like Pennsylvania, if you see key elements of the electorate being courted as not participating in the economic revival or in the economic recovery, then you see some electoral pressure. But I think that that's going to be a really big challenge with the unemployment rate at 4.7%. And while the politicians of both stripes will always question the validity of those numbers, whether that is really reflective of true unemployment, whether that takes into account people that have a job that would like a better job, or people that are just out of the workforce altogether, based on 0.7% unemployment and a rising wage environment, I think that the incumbent party, the Democrats, have a much better chance of winning the White House.
And we canvassed Brian Rose, too, for his reading of the key labour market indicators ahead.
Well, this is going to be very interesting to see whether, you know, say here in the U.S., whether the upcoming election has some economic disruption. So the markets especially tend to hate uncertainty, and if we see a lot of uncertainty ahead of the vote, could be bad news. There's also some evidence that, again, here in the U.S., ahead of the election, that the fear over what might happen after the election is weighing on consumer sentiment, and, you know, if that affects consumer spending, again, it could hurt the economy. And we're in a very unusual circumstance where the two major party candidates for president have very high unfavorability ratings. So pretty much everyone is worried about, well, if the person I don't like, the person who I'm not going to vote for, if that person gets in, then maybe the economy is going to get worse and things are going to be a disaster, so I won't spend money now. And this is, you know, a possible headwind for the economy going forward. And regarding UK referendum also, this, I guess, fortunately, will be at least over soon. So either way, at least the vote is going to be soon. If the vote is to remain, then presumably there won't be that much turbulence in, you know, in labor markets. If the vote is to leave, then the situation gets a little bit more uncertain, and we have to see, you know, just see what happens after that vote.
A final word from Bloomberg Sebastian Salek on any of the other critical medium-term considerations in this space.
Yeah, there's one that springs to mind that's particularly interesting and isn't talked about very much, and it's the number of part-time workers who are part-time for economic reasons. So these are people who don't work full-time, but they would like to. And this is a group of people who, through no will of their own, keep wage growth low, because if they're in a room to negotiate, they're going to ask for more hours rather than more money. And there are lots of groups of people like this that are causing wage growth to stay low. You look at the people who are on benefits or who would be on benefits. If you look back in the US from 2013, the maximum benefits period was cut. So it's that small group of people who are either side of the divide of being either on benefits or in employment. Now the amount to incentivize them has fallen, because otherwise they fall into nothing. So you see them not demanding higher wages either, because they really aren't in a position to do so.
And that's Sebastian Salek, bringing us to the end of this 88th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more via the usual channels. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.